Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Devin, and I'll be your host for our weekly Global Awaken Call. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of this call is really to share stories and to tell stories, stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life, who inspire us through their actions to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. Today, our guest speaker is Makala Kozo-Hattori, and the team is Healing Gift of Cancer and Life. Thanks again for joining today's call. Let us start with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves. Welcome again to our weekly Awaken Call. Today in conversation with Makala Kozo-Hattori. Here is how the call works. In a few minutes, our moderator, Pavi Mehta, will engage in a deep dialogue with our speaker, Makala Kozo-Hattori. And by the top of hour, we'll roll into Q&A and circle of sharing, where we invite all of your reflections and questions. I have opened up the queue right now, so at any point, you can hit *6 on your phone and you'll be prompted when it's your turn to speak. You can also email us at ask@servicespace.org. Again, that is ask@servicespace.org. Our theme for today's call is Healing Gift of Cancer and Life. And probably as we get in a call, I'm looking at the reflection seed for today's conversation. And our guest speaker today is Kozo, and he discovered a cancer diagnosis was a gift. It offered him the opportunity to nurture his soul and roots of his disease. Recognizing that he didn't engage in any of the risk factors that predispose one to cancer, he accepted the gift of cancer, realizing that this disease must have an emotional or spiritual cause. As the question is, what hardship or lack of ease are you facing in your life, which you might be able to view as a gift, an opportunity for deeper healing? And as I think of the seed question, Pavi, what comes to me is we go through struggles and emotional friction on and off, like in our routine life. And I like to think that that in itself can be an opportunity to learn, because that's showing up some kind of discrepancy or some kind of conflict from inside. And all these things can be so powerful if you just try to tune in, and self-awareness and meditation can play such a big role. What are your thoughts on today's theme and the seed question?
Thank you, David, for that opening. And it's a profound question, and I think one that each of us has to, you know, continue to answer in our own ways. That said, I think that our guest today is really a gift in terms of being able to co-explore that question. In fact, it's one of the things I feel like is going to be a central thread in this call with Kozo, because when I first met, I don't remember actually the first time I met Kozo, but I remember the sense of him starting to be a regular presence at the Awakened Circles in Santa Clara. here in California. And I remember that after meditation, when it came his time to share in the circle, he'd so often share a personal story from his day or his week. And these stories would totally have us cracking up in one moment and then put a lump in our throats the next. And I remember being struck by two things. And one was that the stories he was sharing were often of really piercing moments that had challenged him, and stories in which he would share his edges really honestly without trying to make himself look heroic or noble or, you know, and none of that prettifying of his image. And the second thing I remember was that almost always these stories would lead into Kozo attempting to polish his own rough edges by going into the heart of that difficulty and questing for the transformational gift at its core. And to me, I think that it comes down to that. You know, it comes down to what is our relationship with the obstacles, with the challenges, with those bumps in the road. How do we place ourselves? How do we position ourselves in relationship to them? And do we have a sense that the framing of that relationship is oftentimes more of a determiner of our, you know, of our trajectory than the actual thing itself, that how we approach something has such leverage in it. And to me, the spirit in which Kozo's approached the story of his cancer diagnosis, you know, he doesn't, that the way he's approached it really holds that key. He doesn't gloss over the challenges, and yet he doesn't really dwell within their limits. He tries to tell his life like it is to himself and to us. And he's candid about the flaws and the blemishes and the eternal work in progress nature of this human journey. And at the same time is, you know, also deeply in touch and in tune to the deeper possibilities of, you know, what does it mean to treat life as a healing gift? To encounter every being, every event and circumstance in our lives with the trust that it holds healing medicine and can lead towards a place of ever deepening love. And this is not to say it's easy or it happens overnight, but to hold that possibility, you know, I feel like that's who Makala Kozo Hattori is. You know, that's part of the essence of who he is. And alongside that, he's a father, a husband, a writer, a seeker, a counselor, and storyteller. I also want to add, when he was 5 years old, he wanted to be Ultraman, which I am assuming is some kind of superhero. And when he was 12 years old, he wanted to be a Jedi Knight. And I believe he even had stationery that read Obi-Wan Hattori. Some designer stationery right there. He's a dear friend and someone whose journey has been deeply influenced by many spiritual traditions and teachers. And on this call, I hope we'll hear him speak more about the profound practices and concepts from the Hawaiian lineage that he was born into, as well as the insights, learnings, and many shifts that have transpired in his life post-diagnosis. Kozo, it is a wonderful Christmas Eve gift to have you here with us on this call. Thank you so much for making the time for it.
Thank you, Pavi. It's a gift to be here, and I mean that in all different ways. Wow, I don't know where you dug up all that stuff, but you're incredible. I did have stationery that said Obi-Wan Hattori, may the force be with you. And and thank you for just that. I mean, you brought back so many wonderful memories of awakened circles and sitting in that circle and you know, feeling, wow, I don't know if I should share this. It's pretty intense. It's pretty, you know, personal, and it's pretty, you know, sometimes embarrassing, or embarrassing is not the word, but then sharing it and then being welcome with open arms and just goodwill. And that's been a really powerful part of my healing journey, is to be able to expose myself like that and to get love and appreciation and just care and tenderness and kindness back from the circle. So thank you for that beautiful reminiscence.
Well, it's a circle of gratitude for sure. Because on this call, we've got a lot to cover, but I was thinking that, kind of selfishly, because it's something I'm curious about too, is if we could just rewind the tape a little bit, and if you could give us a snapshot sort of retelling of your roots and, you know, kind of your growing up years and what the key influences were for you.
That could take the whole call, but
snapshot. If we had to flip through an album,
yeah, snapshot. I was a really bizarre kid. My parents, my mom and my stepdad are both from Hawaii, and they were a-religious. They weren't atheists or anything. We didn't go to church or anything. And when I was a young kid, for some reason, all I wanted to do was go to church. So I'd go to church with my friends, and I'd go to a Catholic church, I'd go to a Christian church. I've been to a synagogue, and then I was just always wanting to go to church. I was always wanting to pray, and nobody else in my family did that, so they thought it was bizarre. And then at a certain point, my mom joined a Jodo Shinshu Buddhist temple, and she was kind of like, she'd go every once in a while to church, but mostly she'd go to the events, and do volunteer work and stuff. So she wouldn't go to church every Sunday. So I found a family who drove me to church. So I'd wake up, walk across town, and then they'd take me to church and then bring me back, and I'd walk back home. And I remember the kids in their family looking at me like going, "You don't have to go to church and you're choosing to go to church? Like, what's wrong with you?" And so I just had this this very strong desire to for spirituality, I think. And then, when I learned about Buddhism, I learned about the Buddha and enlightenment, that just, planted a seed. And, that was a goal for a long time, is to be like the Buddha. And then at the same time, my parents would send me away every summer and Christmas break and Easter break, because my stepdad worked for United Airlines, so as his children, we could fly for free. So they'd send me away to Hawaii to spend time with my Hawaiian grandfather and his mother, my grandmother. And we'd spend time in this place in Hawaii called Nu'uanu. Nu'uanu is, it means like the higher, like high cool place, and it's actually where most of the churches are in above Honolulu. Like there's a Buddhist temple there, there's a Shinto temple, there's Christian churches. It's like where all the churches congregate. And my grandfather lived there, so there's a couple good things about that. One, it was a very sacred and holy place. But another thing is there weren't too other many kids living up there, so I was pretty isolated. It was just me and my Hawaiian grandfather and my brother, and I used to hate it. I used to hate being isolated there, being away from my friends in California and just kind of just stuck in this, it wasn't near the beach. It was in the high ground. It wasn't near the beach. My grandmother couldn't drive, so we'd have to take the bus everywhere. And I used to really hate it. But looking back, my Hawaiian grandfather and my grandmother were teaching me deep lessons. So all of that comes into play when I was diagnosed with cancer. Like all that spirituality that I received as a kid, all that, teaching, meditation, Buddhism, Hawaiian spirituality, all comes into play. And looking back, it just seems like it was training, it was like Jedi training for this challenge that I'm faced with today.
I'm reminded of the life of Pi. I don't know if you've read it, but where this begins with this little boy in Pondicherry who's just so curious about prayer and who just has this desire to taste all the different practices that are out there. And it's always a mysterious thing, you know, where does that seed of longing come from, and what place that in your heart? And
one of my favorite books, Pavi, and there's that scene, right, where the imam comes up to him and the Hindu, and they come up and they say, no, you're a Hindu, no, you're a Muslim, no, you're, right, and he says, and he responds, I just want to know God, you know, I don't care what flavor it is, I just want to be close to God, and I think I, you know, luckily I had that same experience where, because I attended a Christian church, and in my life I've attended Christian churches, I've attended, you know, Jewish synagogues, I've been to holy mosques, you know, in Morocco and things, and I don't see any contradictions. I just see as, okay, here's another path that leads to God, you know, like, wow, look at this one's flavored with mint tea, and this one's flavored with, you know, I don't know, you know, like Hanukkah. So I just see them all as little, the same path, you know. So I'm very lucky in that nowadays I'm pretty pan-spiritual. Like I see it, the value in all of those practices.
Well, I want to come back to that, because I definitely, one of the things that has been a gift to many of us who, you know, get to hear you and interact with you more regularly is just the window that you open into the Hawaiian traditions for many of us who haven't had that exposure before, and just the concepts that we don't have equivalents for those words in English, and yet, you know, they're such profound doorways, I think. So I would love to return to that. But before that, I just wanted to maybe jump right into, you know, that the title of this talk was the healing gift of cancer, of this awaken call, and that's a, you know, it can sound kind of, oh yeah, you know, like a nice catchy title, but you know, when you look at what is it that enables you to truly to say that and mean it, you know, the healing gift of cancer. I almost feel like that you don't necessarily start there. It's where you arrive. There's a process, maybe, is my sense, and that's what allows you to inhabit that perspective. Would you say that's right, or do you think that was something that sort of came easy?
No, I mean, you know, like in the beginning, I all saw cancer as a gift, you know, not always, but even when I was sitting in that room after they did a biopsy, and just by the tone of the voice of the doctor when he left a message, I could tell, I was like, yeah, something's not right, right? So when I went in for the meeting with him, and he said, you know, we did the biopsy and you have cancer, you know? I was tracking my body, like, because I knew bad news was coming. I wasn't sure what the news was, or I knew quote unquote bad news was coming. And I was tracking my body, and I didn't, like, my heart didn't skip a beat. My breathing was fine and everything. And I was like, that's very curious. Like, how did I get cancer? Like, you know, like, it was more like curiosity. It was more like curiosity. It wasn't dread, or it wasn't fear. It wasn't, and I was, wow, that's really interesting. Of all the people to get cancer there, I had colorectal cancer, and I was like, that's so bizarre, because I eat well, I exercise, I'm very thin, I don't drink, I don't smoke, you know, I don't stress a lot. Like, that's really bizarre. Like, I was just kind of like, oh, that's interesting. That kind of attitude, right? So I never had the dread. And then it moved into, as things started, you know, circulating around that diagnosis, you know, people started coming forward and offering just hugs and you know, sympathy, or not sympathy, but compassion and love, and and all these different gifts. You know, my friend came over and brought me a juicer with, and he went to Trader Joe's before and just bought tons of food to put in the juicer. And he's like, we're juicing right now, you know, and it was beautiful. And then, so I started seeing cancer as a gift. I'm like, this is such a great gift, you know, like, it's showing me so many different things. And then what happened was I started seeing cancer as a gift. And then my, I guess my purpose or my goal was to heal the cancer, right? And heal the gift of cancer. And I thought I was going to be this vanguard. I was going to heal the gift of cancer, not with chemo, radiation, and surgery. I was going to do it with natural practice and alternative medicine. And I was going to offer that healing gift to the world, right? And what has shifted is, like, rather than healing the gift of cancer, it has changed to the healing gift of cancer. Because before, I was trying to change cancer. And, you know, we had this awaken call with that this speaker said, you know, that there's this sharp difference between arrogance and humility. And arrogance is trying to change the other, and humility is being willing to be changed by the other. And it really resonated with me that, you know, healing the gift of cancer was me trying to change cancer. It was me trying to heal cancer, cure it, and make it go away. And what it's turned into is the healing gift of cancer. Now I'm receiving from cancer. And if cancer goes away, it goes away. If it doesn't go away, it's going to keep giving. And I'm just going to keep receiving from it and stay in a place of humility and of gratitude. And that shift, Avi, that shift has changed so much in my life. I try to remember that. Cancer is like a little reminder when I deal with other people in my life, when I deal with, you know, elections, when I deal with whatever. Rather than try to change the other person, I try to receive and heal from the gift of whatever is happening. And it's been one of the biggest shifts in my life that has made my life so much more easy and peaceful and allowed me to remain with an open heart.
There's a lot there. And I just want to, you know, for the purposes of the listeners, you know, for them to really understand where you're coming from with this, could you speak a little bit about what you mean by the word, when you say healing, what does that word mean to you? Because I think sometimes we often mistake healing for curing. Or,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And so for you, like, when you use it, what does it mean?
Yeah, so Pavi, something happened to me last week. And I mean, it was powerful. And rather than try to define words, I'd rather just tell us, you know me, I'd just rather tell a story. So,
perfect. I love it.
You know, I've been trying to make this tumor go away for a year and a half with diet and all these different treatments and ozone and all these things. And I had a sigmoidoscopy about a week and a half ago. And that although the tumor shrunk, it hasn't, it kind of morphed and it kind of changed shapes and it's moving, you know. And it became really clear to me looking at that sigmoidoscopy, looking at those images, that, like, hey, you know, you've tried it for a year and a half to make this thing disappear, and it's not disappearing. It's shrinking, but it's not disappearing, and it's actually moving, and it could move out. It could metastasize, you know. So it just became really – it became evident, like, in an instant, like, okay, you're going to get the surgery. And I looked at my gastroenterologist who's been trying to get me to do chemo radiation surgery for a year and a half. And I said, I'm going to do the surgery. And when I said that, I thought I would have this feeling of, like, defeat, or this feeling of, like, oh, you know, alternative is conceding to Western medicine, or, you know, or disappointment. And what I felt instead was just this peace. I just felt at peace. I was like, I'm going to get the surgery. Wow, that feels good. It feels like a weight lifted from my shoulders, you know, and I was really puzzled by it. I was like, of all the feelings I thought when I would concede to surgery, if I thought about conceding to surgery, that's not what I thought I'd feel. I didn't think I'd feel this peacefulness and this wholeness. And then I was having a conversation with a friend last week, and it occurred to me, and this is where I'm, you know, I apologize if some of this is, you know, these are kind of some stark images that came to me. It occurred to me, I was talking to my friend, and he was talking about, you know, past wounds and healing. And then, and I had this image of when I was 4 years old, and my stepfather, who comes from like old school Hawaii, and I love my stepfather. I mean, he raised me like his own child. But he came from a very, you know, a background where, like, if you did something wrong, you got what they call slaps to the head, you know? You just got smacked in the head. And so I had this image, you know, when I was 4 years old, my stepfather came in, and he used to, like, if we did something wrong, he'd, you know, grab his belt, take off his leather belt, and he'd pull our pants down, like, all the way, like our underwear and everything, and he'd hold us up, and he'd spank us with the leather belt on our backsides, you know, and we'd be totally exposed, like, you know, out in the open. And that image just came up, you know, of you know, having my butt exposed and being swatted with this leather belt. And I realized, you know, I'm 51 years old now, so for 47 years, I've been clenching and protecting and fearful of that exposed backside and you know, just holding on there. And what happened when I agreed to the surgery is I basically surrendered and literally exposed my bare backside to people who I've previously thought of as enemies with sharp knives, you know, and just said, go at it. And there was this deep release of that clench, of that fear, of that protectiveness. And I've had these, like, you know, premonitions of this before. Like, I did energy work with this woman once, and she said, you know, your chakras are open, and you have really strong energy, and you have strong ancestral energy. She said, but your backside, around your buttocks, it's closed. There's no energy. It's like shut off, you know? And I was like, oh, that's bizarre. You know, this is before the cancer diagnosis. And so when I realized that, and when I conceded to the surgery, and when I surrendered, it's like all that fear and protectiveness just stopped fighting and softened and drained. And there was a peacefulness that I think is 47 years in the making, you know? And I looked at that child, I looked at that four-year-old child, and I said, oh my, I'm so sorry. I've been clenching you for so long. I've been forcing you to stay in this traumatic state for so long. And I just, rather than, you know, clench or protect or you know, on the bad side of it, I'd often overcompensate. You know, I try to be over tough and, you know, try to deny. And I just went to that child and I said, it's okay. You know, I'm here with you. I don't care who comes with what instruments or what, I'm going to be here to not necessarily protect you, but just love you and hold you and comfort you. And that's the kind of thing where, like, I don't care what the cancer does now. Like, that's a 47-year healing, you know. And I don't. That's not just a 47-year healing. That's a healing that goes generational. Because you know what they say about physical abuse? It's a cycle and it gets repeated. And I was actually repeating that on my own children. So that's a healing that's going to heal, you know, my ancestors, that inner child, my body, and my children and the generations to come. You know, it's going to allow me to cradle my own sons when they are at their worst state or whatever, rather than to shame them or to, you know, worst case scenario, hit them as well, which I was doing when they were younger. So yeah, that has nothing to do with being free of cancer. It has nothing to do with curing cancer. What occurred to me at a certain point was, you know, my journey is not to be cancer-free. My journey is to be free whether I have cancer or not, you know? And and there's a liberation there that happened when I agreed to surgery that has freed me, has, in Hawaii we say kala, has, when you say sorry in Hawaii, you say e kala mai, and it means cut me from this, like liberate me from this, cut this away from me, you know? And I feel like I've been kalad from that. I feel like I've, you know, 47 years of this intertwining and this gripping, and I've, it's just, boom, it just cut me and released me and freed me from that. And I don't know what the cancer is going to do, but I'm so grateful that it kalad that. I'm so grateful that I can live my life now and raise my children now without that gripping and without that generational abuse. And it's, that's, to me, that's more important than my bodily health, you know, because that has to do with something I'm going to transfer on for generations.
And I think, you know, jumping in here, I think what's been beautiful to witness as you've gone on your journey, I've had the privilege of having conversations with you along the way, and to see that that really there's a kind of a dance in finding that balance between, you know, between treating the body and it as an instrument, and with gratitude, with humility, with respect, with compassion, and yet not getting too deeply invested. Not kind of using that as your only and ultimate metric of healing, and recognizing that, you know, this body is embedded within a much, much vaster, broader framework, and to operate kind of, because I, you know, I've seen you also being very mindful and conscious and thoughtful about the decisions you were making about how to create a circumstance in which your body could do its, you know, best to find a healing pathway. And at the same time, that wasn't what was overtaking your thought process. You know, it wasn't invested in that outcome. And I think that doing that, because I think it's very easy to inhabit one or the other extreme, to be like, oh, you know, let this body go to the winds. I'm going to just, you know, take it as it comes and not really, you know, put any attention or effort or thought into how to take care of it. And you can go the other extreme of getting so deeply obsessive, I think, about every detail that you almost hamper the natural flow of what wants to come through you. And, you know, your talk about humility earlier reminded me of one of the most powerful definitions of it I've heard. Is from the writer Doris Lessing, and I'm paraphrasing here, but she says, humility is a selfless view of reality. And I feel like I feel like you've come through this journey to a more and more selfless relationship to, you know, to reality.
That's beautiful, Pavi. Yeah, it, you know, to tell the truth, it has been a dance, you know, and at times it's been a mosh pit, and at other times it's been a you know, a more graceful dance. But I've gone on the deep end of both those sides, you know. There was a point where I was like, you know, to tell the truth, I was like, let this cancer take me, you know, like
yeah,
you know, there's this desire to just be free of this mortal coil, you know, and just, okay, you know, this is my deal. Let's take me out. I want to be with God. You know, I want to take the quick route. And then there's other times where I was so adamant on curing the body that at a certain point I starved myself. You know, I was doing this raw vegan diet, and I didn't really like eating the raw vegan diet, so I wasn't eating much, and I got down to like 119 pounds, and you know, I'm normally like 150, and I was just like, you know, people were coming up to me and saying, Kozo, you're disappearing, you know, like, you need to eat, you know, and so I've been on both sides of that, you know, like, dance, and to the extreme. That's one thing about my personality, I go to the extreme. And so I've been on both sides of that. And yeah, there's a certain point, and the best way I can put this is, you know, this image came to me, or just this idea came to me. You know how they say your body is a temple.
Mm-hmm.
And so to treat your body as a temple, you know, to give it nurturing food and to take care of it. And in Hawaii, we say olu olu. Olu olu means gentleness, you know, and but, you know, this Hawaiian elder said it doesn't mean necessarily gentleness. It means to treat like a baby, you know, to olu olu your body, to treat it like a baby, you know, give it rest and take care of it, nurture it. And what that made me realize is that, yeah, your body's a temple, you know, and we often just end there. Your body's a temple, treat it like a temple, clean it and whatever. But what we forget is that there's a God in the temple. And for me, inside our body, inside our temple, is this young 5-year-old child God, or, you know, and we have to olu olu that child God, and we have to nurture that child God. And there were times in my life where I just pushed my body to the extreme, you know, both in cancer treatment, but also in like surfing and meditation and all different kinds of things. Like, I just pushed it to the extreme, you know, and just when I was tired, I'd say like, toughen up. No, I'm going to do more, you know? And what cancer has taught me is you got to olu olu that child inside, you know, because every time you push your body like that, that child is crying for rest or peace or just to be hugged or, you know, or just to be recognized. And so now I'm more gentle with that child, with that temple. I'm more gentle with the temple, and I'm more gentle with that child God inside. So, you know, if I feel like I need to eat something that isn't raw and vegan, I'm going to eat it because that's what the child inside wants, you know. And or if I feel like I need to sleep 10 hours a certain night, then I'm going to sleep 10. I'm just going to stay in bed, and I'm not going to get up and look at my computer. I'm just going to stay in bed. And that's been just a wonderful shift of relationship with my body and with that inner child. And you know, the funny thing, it translates out to my relationship as a father, because
I was just going to ask.
Yeah. Because when I was strict and like Spartan with my body, then I kind of transferred that onto my sons, you know, and when they'd cry or when they'd be tired, I'd be like, you're not tired, you know, or like, you should have gotten more rest. That's why I told you to go to bed earlier last night. It's your fault, you know, like, and now, you know, I try to like listen to them and hear them. And, you know, when they're at their worst state, when they're throwing a tantrum, rather than shame them or get upset with them, I try to just treat the tantrum like, oh my God, I'm so sorry that you're so upset that you can't have another piece of candy. Oh, and I pat them on the head or something. And there's this amazing thing that happens, Pavi, where it's like, you know, in quantum mechanics, there's the idea of entanglement. If you have like two particles that are in different places and you like spin one, the other spins automatically. It's entangled, you know? And I feel like when I nurture my young sons like that, I nurture that 5-year-old inner child goddess that's in my temple. And when I nurture my body and when I nurture that inner child goddess that's in my God that's in my temple, then I nurture my sons and generations down from them. And it's been this wonderful shift that has changed my relationship with my children, that has changed my relationship with my body, that has changed my relationship with life. You know, I think that's one of the wonderful gifts of Hawaii is, you know, olu and gentleness and fun and joy and just hang out at the beach and love it, you know, and rather than be a Spartan preparing for a fight to the death, you know, just you know, cruise, you know, just go lay on the beach and enjoy the sun, you know, and it's been beautiful to do that as a, you know, a father and also as an older person, you know, like I feel like I'm surrendering to something where I'm not striving.
I want to come back to the topic of fatherhood in a minute, but before that, just want to use this as a springboard into what? But you know, olu, is that how you pronounce it? Olu?
Yeah. Yeah,
that is one concept. I feel like there are, you know, there are so many of these keys from your tradition that you've drawn on and have opened, you know, these kind of really valuable doorways into the heart of this experience for you. And as you look at, you know, from that rich repository, could you give us some of a sense of some of the other keys from the Hawaiian tradition that have been really important to you in this time?
Yeah, you know, and first I'd like to say that it's not my tradition, actually. I'm actually, you know, my family came through Hawaii and goes generations back in Hawaii, but I'm actually Japanese-American. My family comes from Japan, and my Hawaiian grandfather is actually is a grandfather through marriage. You know, he's my step-grandfather. Uh-huh. So I'm not what they call Kanaka Maoli. I'm not Hawaiian blood. Like I have no actual Hawaiian blood in me. But you know, I was raised in a lot of ways by my Hawaiian grandfather.
Yeah.
And there just came this point, and this is fairly recently. You know, my grandfather's been passed for 25, 30 years, and there just came this point where I felt like he was coming back to me and speaking to me, and you know, he'd say stuff like, learn the Hawaiian language, you know, and I'd be like, what? Like, I'm 51, Grandpa, why am I going to learn Hawaiian? like Hawaiian is like one of the most, you know, like, why would you learn that? Because everyone in Hawaii speaks English. Very few people speak Hawaiian. You go anywhere else in the world, nobody's going to speak Hawaiian. Like, why would you learn Hawaiian? And he's like, learn the Hawaiian. And he's like, learn to count in Hawaiian, learn this, you know, and he's kind of like guiding me in this way. And I was like, people are going to, and I'm not even Hawaiian, you know, like, I'm not Hawaiian. I'm only learning Hawaiian. I'm not Hawaiian. And what I've realized is that what I was, and whether that was actually my Hawaiian grandfather talking to me or whether that was just my consciousness taking a different form, talking to me, was that what I realized is that, you know, there's this great movie out. I suggest everyone to see it. It's called The Arrival. And then in it, these aliens come down and this linguist has to communicate with them. And what she realizes is that when you learn any other language, any other form of communication, you don't just learn how to speak a different language. You actually see a completely different worldview. You see the world in a completely different way by shifting the words. And what I've learned, you know, what my consciousness or my Hawaiian grandfather was trying to teach me was learn Hawaiian because there's a worldview of Hawaii that is unique and beautiful and powerful and that the world needs now. And, you know, probably the most important concept or word there in Hawaii is aloha. And, you know, aloha has been, you know, commercialized so much that its original meanings were lost, you know? And so what I've been feeling into is to really explore the deepest aspects of aloha and what it comes down to for me is what they call kapu aloha. Kapu is sacred, means sacred. It's actually the same word that, you know, taboo came from. Taboo is actually a Polynesian word. And the Hawaiian K was actually a T before, so taboo. So kapu is is sacred, and aloha is sacred aloha. And sacred aloha is like, I'm going to love no matter what. You know, you come, you steal my land, I'm going to love you. You come, you beat me, I'm going to love you. You come, you string me up on a cross, I'm going to love you. You know, it's, and I'm using those examples because it crosses traditions. You know, it's the same ahimsa that Gandhi talked about. It's the same love that Christ talked about. It's the same unconditional love that the Dalai Lama talks about. But it's kapu aloha, you know, and to remain in kapu aloha no matter what. And in a certain point of my journey, I realized I have to kapu aloha cancer, you know, like cancer is here, you know, threatening to take this body away, you know, threatening to take me away from my children, threatening to end my life early. And I still have to kapu aloha it. I still have to love it. I still have to unconditionally open my arms to it and embrace it and olu it and to nurture it, you know, like a little child. And you know, one of the Hawaiian elders, Auntie Pilahi Paki, she said this in the at 1970 Governor's Conference. She jumped up on stage, you know, and nobody stopped her because they're like, oh, that's Auntie. And she just jumped up on stage at this Governor's Conference and she said, you know, in the next century, she's talking about 2000s, the world's going to need medicine, and that medicine's going to come from Hawaii, and it's going to come in the form of aloha. You know, she predicted that. And, you know, I'm here with a lot of people and, you know, a lot of Kanaka Maoli, a lot of Hawaiian blooded elders who are just sharing aloha because the world needs it, you know. Donald Trump needs aloha. You know, Donald Trump doesn't need our judgment. He needs aloha. People who are doing crazy things, they don't need our judgment. They need aloha. They need kapu aloha. And as hard as it is for us to, cancer doesn't need, you know, doesn't need to be poisoned, chemoed, or radiated. It needs aloha. And so that's kind of my daily practice. And I'm so grateful for it, even though I, you know, at times, you know, I feel really odd. You know, I talk to these Hawaiian elders and they're like, hey, Makala, you know, I have the Hawaiian name. My grandfather gave me the Hawaiian name, so I have the Hawaiian name. Hey, Makala, you know, who's your Hawaiian elder? Who's your Hawaiian ancestor? And I'm like, oh, I'm actually not Hawaiian. And they're like, what? How come you're not? You know, so I sometimes I feel like, wow, why am I doing this? I'm not even Hawaiian. But, you know, they practice kapu aloha, so they go, what? You're not Kanaka Maoli. And I'm like, no, I'm not Kanaka Maoli. And they're like, hey, but you get big aloha, you get big heart, bro. So I'm going to teach you, you know. And they practice kapu aloha. They don't go, oh, you're not Hawaiian, so I'm not going to teach you. I haven't had that experience. I've had these, you know, powerful elders say, like, I love what you're doing, Makala, keep doing it, and here's something to help you on your journey. And they know I'm not Hawaiian, and that's kapu aloha.
That's, you know, and it makes me think of, like, these are such limited identities that we have in these mortal coils. You know, when you know that, and science tells us, we all trace back to a common ancestor. You know, we've never been just one thing, one place. And so these affinities that, you know, you feel or that different people feel for different places or cultures or traditions that may not have a rational explanation on the surface, they're probably not that, you know, you're probably more Hawaiian than you realize you are, you know.
We all are.
Exactly. And what does that even mean? You know, I think of Pancho and like this, in, you know, these boundaries that we've drawn on the map are so arbitrary in some sense. There's a universal spirit behind it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, I have these Hawaiian Healing Circle conference calls, and one of the attendees is Kunal, who a lot of you know from Awakened Circles. And Kunal is this beautiful young Indian man, and he's actually in India right now. And he calls in, and you know, he has the accent, and but he says, you know, Kozo, although I don't look it, or although I'm in India, I feel like I'm Hawaiian. I feel like I'm Hawaiian. And I'm like, hey, you got the aloha, you're Hawaiian, you know. Like,
there you go.
There's a lot of people who are Kanaka Maoli, right? Or there's a lot of people who have the blood lineage, but they don't have the aloha, you know, and they're still fighting. And, you know, I think the heart of who we are, and I'm talking about not just Hawaiian, or I'm talking about anything, the heart of who we are, you know, when you talk about that core lineage, is love, is aloha. And if you can tap into that, then everybody is your brother and your sister. And not just, you know, humans, but the planet, the aina, the land, the animals, you know, the spirit animals. And you know, for me, those Hawaiian elders really inspired me and set the precedent for me, because what I didn't realize, is when I set up this dialectic between alternative medicine, natural medicine, and Western allopathic medicine, when I set that up, I was actually not practicing kapu aloha. You know, I was actually creating this war, this conflict, you know, and it was like natural medicine versus allopathic medicine. And so when I agreed to the surgery, that was kind of like me dropping those lines, dropping that line in the sand, you know, erasing that line in the sand, and then just accepting it all, embracing it all, and returning just to aloha. Like, I'm gonna love my surgeon. I'm gonna love, you know, one of my Hawaiian elders, she said to me just the other day, she had to do some, she was dealing with some healing issues, and she had to go in the hospital. And she said, you know what shifted for me, Makala? She said, I started treating everybody on the medical staff like they were my best friend. If a nurse came in and she was having a tough day and she was just like yanking me around and not speaking to me, I treated her like she was my best friend. I tried to have aloha for every single person on my medical staff. And she said, that was so important for my healing journey. And I realized when she said that, I realized I was treating, you know, my oncologist, my gastroenterologist, my surgeon, like they were my enemies. I was like, screw you. I'm not going to do what you say. I'm going to do this, you know? And I was treating them like my enemies, and like, ha ha, the tumor shrunk. You said it wouldn't shrink. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, I have this arrogance and this, you know, this separation. And then when I agreed to the surgery, like, I love my surgeon now. You know, I love my oncologist, and I love my gastroenterologist, and I love, and I'm gonna walk into that surgery room, and I'm gonna love every single person who's part of that team, because regardless of how we have different ideas about how to heal the body, every single one of them there is there to help me heal. You know, is an angel, like, to help me heal, and I'm gonna treat them as that. You know, and that's kapu aloha. That's what the, you know, my Hawaiian elders were trying to teach me, that's what living life of aloha is, you know, like even just saying, you know, allopathic, that's like saying, you know, in Hawaii, they often say haole, you know, haole means like white person. It actually means person who doesn't have ha, doesn't have breath, doesn't have spirit. But it's a separation thing, you know, like, hey, you know, you're haole, you're a white person, you stole our land, you know. But the deep Hawaiian elders, they're like, hey, I love haoles. I love the people who stole it. I love everybody, you know. There is no separation.
And we're very close to the top of the hour where we'll open up for Q&A, and David will help us transition. But before that, because I just wanted to, so much of what you talk about and what you've done with your life really is in service. And you've been part of hospice care for a remarkable 94-year-old woman. You've experimented with, you know, unconditionally washing the feet of the homeless. You've volunteered at Karma Kitchen. You've created these, you know, healing circles that you offer as a gift. And I'm just wondering, in the process of this last year and a half of the journey with cancer, how has your relationship to service deepened, or are there any new ways in which you've come to understand service?
For a long time, service was something I did to build merits, right? So, for me, it wasn't just to build merits. It was almost like I felt bad about the things I'd done in my past. So I was trying to, like reconcile them. Like, okay, before I was really selfish in my life. Like I was a surfer and I just thought about myself and I didn't care about others, or, I treated past relationships. I treated people poorly. Like I said, I actually was hitting my son when he was young. And so I was like, oh man, I got a lot of bad karma. I got to make up for this. I've built a, just bad energy. So I originally got into it, I'm like, I'm going to help serve. And every time I serve, I'm like, okay, that'll take care of when I treat this person poorly and this and that. And it was kind of like this exchange, which is funny because one of the, the core values of service space is from transaction to trust, but I was using service as a transaction. but what I've realized in this journey and this process and doing service is that, I talk about living kapu aloha or living in aloha or being aloha. Aloha always serves. Love always serves. That's the only reaction love has is service. And so, when somebody slaps you across the face, love looks and goes, how can I serve this person? And turns the other cheek. When my kids are, screaming, yelling like, ah, Dad, I hate you. You won't buy me this certain thing in Target, and I can't get them out of Target and they're throwing a tantrum. Love says, how can I serve this child right here, right now? And then I'll get down on my knees and I'll just hug them. And when I see anything, especially the things, when somebody cuts me off in traffic, I think, how can I serve this person? How can I serve them? What's the best way I can serve them, So it has turned for me into, rather than the transaction, it has turned for me into just, I don't like the term knee-jerk, but it's just this, it's a response. It's an immediate response. And I know when I respond with service, I'm in aloha. I know when I respond with service, I'm in love. And I know when I respond with service, I feel amazing. And it doesn't matter what's going on in my world. Everything's great, And I know when I see something and it's calling for service and I don't serve it, and I go, you don't deserve service. You're yelling at me, When I do that, it causes suffering. It causes conflict. The other thing, it causes the other person to suffer. Like if somebody's yelling at you and you don't serve them, they get even more upset and they suffer more. So you're not only causing yourself suffering, you're exacerbating the suffering of somebody who's in suffering. It's the opposite of compassion. And so for me, it's turned into this just natural way of staying in aloha, staying in love, staying in the state. And I know when I'm in it, and I know when I'm not in it. And I love that about service. It's so easy to know, like, you don't go, hey, I wonder if I'm serving or not. You know when you're serving, and you know when you're not serving, right? So it's this great litmus test that says, are you in aloha or are you not in aloha? Are you practicing what you preach or are you not practicing what you preach? And so for me, service has been just a wonderful gift that keeps me in aloha, that keeps me in love, that keeps me whole and in unity. And in Hawaii we say lokahi. Lokahi is unity, but you know, the Auntie Palahi Paki, she said, lokahi doesn't really mean unity, it means unbrokenness. And so when I'm serving, I'm keeping that unbrokenness. I'm actually mending the, if there is brokenness, I'm mending the brokenness. But when I'm not serving, then I'm not in unity. I'm breaking bridges, or I'm burning bridges, I guess. So that's how the shift has been for me. And it's so simple, right? It's so simple. You wake up every day, and anything that arises, all you have to ask yourself is, how can I serve this? And from there, life just becomes a gift.
I like how you say it's simple. And it is. I mean, it's simple, and it's the most challenging thing we'll ever do. it's not rocket science, but that doesn't necessarily, and that's where the, you know, it's kind of the opportunity and the challenge and the blessing of it is it's so accessible to anyone, anywhere, anytime. And we just have to see it. Yeah. Thank you, Koza. I know David will want to jump in now to invite callers with the instructions for getting in the queue.
Thank you, Pori. And such an inspiring conversation and so enlightening for me personally as well. I might have a couple of questions on my own if I can be a greedy of a host. But before I give myself a chance or continue on this, I would like to invite all of our callers to share a thought, a story, or ask a question to Koza. You're welcome to do so. When you press *6 on your phone, it will get you right in the queue, and I will open up the queue 1% at a time. You're welcome to email us questions at askask@servicespace.org. And for all of our listeners participating on streaming, you're welcome to complete their form, and that will get your question to us as well. And while thinking about the conversation, Koza and Pavi, it reminded me of the book that I read from Dr. Joan Borisenko, I think almost about 12 years ago. And she's talking about mind-body healing and self-awareness and relaxation response and all. One of the things that she had developed so well in her book is, end of the day, all the feelings and emotions that you have fall in the two categories. One is fear, and second is love. So compassion, kindness, service, helping others are all a channel for love. And anger, frustration, worry, tension, stress, there is a fear behind it. And it's a matter of detecting what is the source of fear and then accepting, embracing it. And it looks like, Koza, you are doing it. And it's so inspiring to see you doing that as well. If I may ask, Koza, how do you deal with your fear? Or do you have fear anymore?
It's interesting, Devin, because we just had an Awaken Circle where they talked about the reading was on moods and, you know, bad negative emotions and you know, breathing through them and dropping in a little positive emotion to disperse them. And while I was listening to that reading and while I was listening to the shares, I was like, my experience has been very different lately. I understand the idea of having, like, you know, fear and love and the negative emotions under fear, anger, resentment, and all that, and, you know, love, and then trying to shift from the negative emotions to the positive emotions. But that's not kapu aloha, you know, like, so whatever, for me, you know, whatever arises, I embrace that. And what I've found happens is, so for me, say, for example, anger. I spent most of my life trying to control my anger. either through meditation or through Aikido or through all different kinds of ways of trying to control my anger. As you know, as somebody who was physically beaten as a child, I had a lot of anger. And so I spent a lot of my years trying to control that through breathing and all these different things. And then, you know, when I get angry, I feel really bad about myself, and I'd be like, God, you know, why didn't you breathe deeper? Like, what were you thinking? And I get angry at myself for getting angry, you know? So like, it was almost, I was increasing the anger. And lately what I've been feeling into is more like, hey, if I'm going to get angry, I'm going to embrace that. I'm going to love that, you know? And what's been happening in my life is like, if I have an emotion, I don't judge it as good or bad. I don't put it in that category of fear and love. I just let it run through me. And what happens is when it runs through me and it runs, like anger, for instance, when it runs through me and runs its course, it pulls out of it love. And what's left, it's almost like a tea kettle, like people describe it, like a tea kettle blowing off. And then when all the water's gone, all that's left inside the tea kettle is love. It's this wonderful thing. And then, you know, I let that happen a few times, and then I don't get angry anymore. I'm more able to just stay in love. And you know, the same thing with any emotion. I just embrace it and love it. And when it runs its course, all that's left is love. And I have the same feeling about this tumor and cancer. Like, I'm just going to love that thing. I'm going to love it and love it and love it and let it run its course. And if it runs its course and its course is to take this body away, then, you know, that's the cost of kapu aloha. Sometimes, you know, you have to love until you're no more. And, well, you're never no more, but until your body is no more. But I have a feeling that if I love it and love it and love it, it's going to run its course, and all that's going to be left there is love, you know? So it's kind of a shift there where I don't really define things as good and bad. You know, it's the Rumi poem, right? There's the field beyond right and wrong. I'll meet you there. I don't see them as good or bad. I just love them and let them run their course and recenter in love, in aloha.
Wow, so well said. And Kulvir, your answer reminded me of another caller we had, I think, 6 or 8 months ago, Pierre Pravervan. And I think probably you moderated that conversation as well.
Oh,
but
yeah.
One thing that I kept from that call is my heart is gored with honey. And looks like your heart is gored with honey as well.
Yeah.
Hey.
Pierre Pradovan is one of my deepest guides and healers. And Pavi, I love that conversation you had with him. I think of Pierre Pradovan daily. Actually, just 2 weeks ago, I was supposed to go to Awaken Circle, right? And I kept having to go to the bathroom. And, you know, it's creeping up on 7 p.m. and I kept having to go to the bathroom. I'm like, what's going on? I'm not going to be able to go. I'm not going to be able to sit in meditation like this. You know, I'm going to disrupt everyone. I'm not going to be able to do the shares. And, you know, it's coming on 7 p.m. and I just kept having to go to the bathroom. At a certain point, I said, you know what? I can't go to Awaken Circle. I have to just pass. And I was sitting on the toilet and I was like, God damn it. What's going on? You know, and I said that like, I thought that or kind of said that, and I thought of Pierre Pradovan, and I went, no, not goddamn it. God bless it. God bless it. I don't know what's going on, but God bless it, you know? And I blessed not being able to go to Awaken Circle, not being it, you know, having to go to the bathroom. And that felt amazing. You know, it felt like the universe was teaching me a lesson there. Like, you know, it's not so much that you go to Awaken Circle and sit for an hour in meditation and share your circle wisdom or whatever. It's that you bless whatever, wherever, however you are, even if you're sitting on the toilet, you know? And yeah, Pierre Pradovan just gifted me with that. It was wonderful.
Yeah, you know, we always say that we are holding space with awakened calls, so we all can reflect and share stories and nurture ourselves, and the ripples follow through and resonate in so many different ways. But I'm going to read the reflection we had from one of our members, Nancy Ward. And this is, I think, before the call, but it just like the seeds are really getting nurtured and the ripples are flowing. And this is so resonant with what you're saying, Kozo. So I'm going to read a reflection from Nancy Ward. As a person with a cancer diagnosis, I also see it as a gift. It's been an amazing journey of inner transformation. After and while using many different healing modalities, I come to a conclusion that it's not so much a physical but a spiritual journey and healing path we are on. I'm learning more every day. Although I'm still undecided at times about what the next step in my healing journey will be, I feel completely at peace. So well shared and so resonant with what you are developing here as well. I think we have one caller in the queue, and let me get to our first caller here. And as you get your chance, if you would please share your name and where you're calling from, we would really appreciate.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Mike Ludgate. I'm calling from, I'm in Virginia right now, outside of D.C. So I'm kind of enjoying this talk about aloha and healing and wholeness and love. And I guess what my interest is, Kozo, is what your sense is on the role that grace plays in sustaining the healing aloha state. You know, when our limited brokenness and limited human capacity and the sense of brokenness that comes with just being, you know, we're spiritual beings having human experiences, and that human experiences incorporates this the sense of brokenness, since there's no perfection in that human state of experience. So when our limited human capacity requires that which is greater than the common vulnerability that we have as being a human being. So to sustain that sense of aloha, it's in that healing space, you had mentioned sometimes you kind of drop out of that, kind of fall off the track, and then you catch yourself and get back on. I'm wondering, I guess I refer to that as some people call it amazing grace. Somehow something bumps you back into where you need to be in the aliveness of life once you find yourself outside it. Because we're all kind of in the stream of healing, and then all of a sudden we're not. What is it that gets us back on track, the aloha track?
Love that, the aloha track. Mike, beautiful, powerful question. Thank you so much. I've actually had experiences where I was singing Amazing Grace and I just broke down into tears, you know, to save a wretch like me. I just broke down into tears. And
it almost seems like it's not a cognitive response that we're talking about.
No. And
it's an embodied kind of maybe tears of joy or healing or whatever.
Yeah. In my experience with it is that it's all grace, right? It's all grace. Like the universe is showering us with aloha, with healing, with awakening, with love. It's constantly, it's all grace, you know. And what we do is we ignore it, or we say no. I'm gonna heal this. I'm gonna heal this cancer. Makala Kozo Hattori, with my wisdom and with all my book reading, and I'm going to search the internet and I'm going to heal this, you know, and we go into this separate state, right? And then what I experience is that when I just release and go into that space that Nancy was talking about in her share, where I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how to heal this. I don't know if this treatment's going to work. I don't know, you know, what if I'm going to be here in the next year. And we go into the space of surrender and just, I don't know. I trust you, universe. I trust the grace that you're bringing. Then grace flows through us, and it's very simple to stay in that aloha track. But when we go into this space of like, I know better, I can do this, I don't need anybody else's help, that's a big one. I don't need anybody else's help. We get into this illusion of like, I'm doing this all on my own, you know? That's when we close ourselves off from the grace that is always there. And when rather than, you know, say, I'm going to do this on my own, I'm going to do this, I'm going to change my diet, when I said, you know what, I'm going to open myself up for surgery, I'm going to take the surgery, that was me admitting to myself, I can't do this on my own. And now I feel the grace of Western medicine. I feel the grace of the divine. I feel the grace of healing that I was talking about with, you know, 47 years of gripping my backside. I feel all that grace just flow through me when I surrendered and said, you know, it's almost biblical, which is wonderful because it's Christmas. It's almost, you know, Jesus on the cross first said, you know, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? You know, and in that there's a me, there's a like, I deserve not to be forsaken. And then that shifted into, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do, you know, and into this, just this service and get myself out of the way so grace can flow through me. And that's a wonderful question, and it's a powerful one for a healing journey, but it's also a powerful one for, I think, living in alignment with the divine.
Yeah, it's almost seems like you're talking about like there's my truth, your truth, and the truth, and there's a sense of the shift of the truth of the non-self gets you to out of having requirements that things be according to whatever the brain wants it to be or one's thoughts, and you get this other zone where, you know, like, holding space with the space that, with the wholeness that holds me.
Yeah, beautiful.
Seems to be able to incorporate into, it's almost like you press the hyperspace button with the space, with the wholeness that holds me.
Yeah.
And that's the healing zone.
That's the aloha zone. Yeah, that's the all, right? And what I had to realize at a certain point was, yeah, there's, you know, okay, so there's my truth, there's allopathic medicine's truth, there's whatever, there's your truth. The truth, capital T, the truth, you can't know that. You can't, part of us wants to know the capital T truth so we can say, I know the truth and you don't, right? Like, no, you can't know the whole truth. You can't know the big T truth. You just have to surrender and go, I don't know, I can't possibly conceive of this, you know? I can't possibly have the consciousness of the whole universe. And then when you do that, you have the consciousness of the whole universe, right? By giving up any remnant of your truth or my truth or any little T truth, you, and just surrendering, you become, you know, the vessel, or you become the instrument of the capital T truth, and you actually embody it without knowing it, which I know this sounds confusing, but this is just what I've experienced, right? It's just like, I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about healing or surgery or any of those things. But when I just release to that, I don't know, then this truth comes through me and it becomes, everything becomes really clear. And,
right.
And it's not, like you said, it's not mental. it's in Hawaii we say it's, you know, it's in your na'au, it's in your guts. It's visceral. It's just, it's deep inside of you. And it's wonderful. When you can feel that in your na'au, in your guts, when you feel that relinquishing of my truth and you feel the whole truth, that's grace. And I can't think of any better way to be in existence than in grace.
Wonderful, yeah, Kosa. Thank you. We're going to actually have to move. Thank you so much for your questions. Kosa, we have a couple of questions that came in online, do want to read them out because they're beautiful. One person calling in, this is Mitch from New York City, who says, wondering if our beautiful friend Kosa might share with us his surgery date so that we can all hold him and his loved ones and his surgical team in our collective light that day. I love you, Mish.
I miss you. So it is January 12th, Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. And I welcome any, I'm a strong believer in energetics. So I welcome any positive vibes or aloha or just holding sacred space. And Lokahi and unbrokenness in that period, you know, and not necessarily just for me, like, so, you know, the surgery goes well or anything like that, but just so we can gather, you know, and we can hold space together at a certain time on a certain day. So January 12th, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Supposedly the surgery is going to go 3.5 hours.
All right. And, Thank you so much for the question, and thank you, Bobby, for reading that beautiful reflection and question. And always say Mish is my all-time, all-time favorite kind springer. always fun to have Mish on the call. We have one more reflection now, Kosa, from Albert Rowe. I'm going to read that. Thank you. The energies that come with your sharing remind me of lyrics. I never feel more given to you than when you take from me. When you understand the joy I feel caring for you, and you know my giving isn't done to put you in my debt, but because I want to live the love I feel for you, to receive with grace may be the greatest giving. There is no way that I can separate the two. When you give to me, I give you my receiving. When you take from me, I feel so given to. Thank you in aloha. And that's from Albert writing from Oakland. So very well written. I'm going to read this lyric one more time. The energies that come with your sharing remind me of your lyrics. And there it goes. I never feel more given to you than when you take from me. When you understand the joy I feel caring for you, and you know my giving isn't done to put you in my debt, but because I want to live the love I feel for you, to receive the grace, maybe the greatest giving. There is no way that I can separate the two. When you give to me, I give you my receiving. When you take from me, I feel so given to. Such a beautiful reflection. And thank you, Albert, for writing that for us. And as we get closer of the today's call, Kosa, we know you for so long, and I know you for so long now, because we both are awakening call coordinators and we talk all the time. What can we do, like all of the Soristas volunteers, how can we help you in this journey of aloha that you are living and spreading so beautifully? How can we help you?
Yeah, Devin, you know, as a volunteer on Awaken Calls, I know that question is also the question that's coming, and so I've thought about that a lot. And you know, obviously, service space, awaken call, everybody who shares this space has given so much to me on this healing journey, to my family, to all in all different kinds of ways, you know, all the different forms of capital we talk about. So I'm just so grateful for that. But I did, you know, want to offer one thing that hopefully not so much that people can do for me, but maybe just a reminder, and that is just be gentle with yourself, you know. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons that cancer has taught me is for me to be gentle with myself. And I find that when I'm gentle with myself, I'm gentle with others, and you know, the world can use a lot more gentleness. So I know a lot of times, and myself included, when I do service or, try to change the world, I tend to be pretty, like I said, Spartan and like adamant and, you know, push myself to the limits. And I'm just reminded to be gentle and to get rest when we need rest. Even if we have a transcript that we haven't transcribed for 2 weeks and we're late submitting it, be gentle with yourself. And I really believe that when you're gentle with yourself, you're gentle with me, and that's going to heal us all.
I love it. Love it. Be gentle with yourself. Hi, Pavi. Would you like to have a closing question and wrap up today?
Sure. Well, I think we, I'd like to have a closing 15 questions, but we are at the 10:30 mark. I do want to let callers know that Kozo is working on a book that will be a series of essays on his experiences, touching on many of the things and going deeper into many of the things that we discussed on this call. Many of his writings are online. We can send out the links for those. He does a lot around, and this is something we didn't talk too much about, but it's not the least of his efforts, you know, to raise two compassionate boys in today's world. Is not, you know, is not without its challenges, and Kozo takes that responsibility very seriously and spends a lot of writing around compassionate men and the need for that kind of effort and energy in the world. So I would invite people to explore his writing and his journey more deeply. We've had a taste of it today. Thank you so much, Kozo, for being our early Christmas present.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Devin. Thank everybody. And just thank Service Space for making the true gift of, you know, Christmas an embodiment for me. I feel like this is, I was telling Pavi, this is the best Christmas ever. and this call and Service Space being such a large part of that. So thank you.
So before we end our call, we always like to have a minute of gratitude for blessings we have, gratitude for the conversation and the working call that we have, and gratitude that all of us are pursuing in that healing, transforming journey. So if all of you would please join with us for a minute of silence, a minute of gratitude.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.